Hi, my name is Andres.
And I'm Emily, and we're welcoming you to this month's edition of CLAC's Anti-Capitalist Alphabet. Every month, the Agitation Propaganda Committee of CLAC, Montreal's Anti-Capitalist Convergence, takes one word to analyze the news from an anti-capitalist perspective. To hear our previous episodes of Anti-Capitalist Alphabet, visit clac-montreal.net.
So this week, we're talking about charity.
Indeed. We're looking at what the differences are between charity and solidarity, and why that difference is so important. So let's get right into it. First of all, let's consider how charity exists within our society because it is a capitalist society. Capitalism depends on social and economic inequalities in order to develop. For the last few hundred years, the inequality in income between the rich and the poor has been steadily increasing, not only in Canada, but between the different countries of the world.
An example that is often thrown around is the fact that the average income of women is 72% of the average income of men, and that the average income of migrant women is on average 77% of the income of the quote-unquote status-bearing women. So not only are these economic divisions split in terms of class, they are also based in things such as gender, citizenship, and racialization. Statistics show that even when the political climate changes, these economic inequalities continue to worsen.
So in one sense, when we offer charity for lower-income people, we are subsidizing those who are responsible for their poverty and exploitation, rather than pressuring those responsible to challenge systemic injustice. When we promote charitable giving, we don't necessarily ask why people are poor. How can we fight the root causes of poverty and systemic oppression? Many people simply accept that charity helps the quote-unquote less fortunate, that it is a good deed. But we need to also question its role in a larger system of dispossession and economic disparity.
That might be a lot to take in, but it's only the tip of the iceberg.
Indeed, we see it everywhere, from La Guignolée des Médias, Montreal's big media and supermarket-sponsored holiday food drive, to the politicians going to homeless shelter servings for an easy photo op to show they have one day a year to care about low-income people. We see how our friends and families donate their hard-earned cash to help out causes that don't actually address the origins of the issue. One function that charity has is to create a sort of smokescreen for the rich and powerful, to give the illusion that they are caring and benevolent. But every day, they are profiting off of other people's poverty and social exclusion.
For example, through most of the year, the media will present the perspective of the bosses, who are shown as the source of investment, wealth, and job creation. But they demonize or ignore the poor and other marginalized people who are actually working to produce this wealth, which they don't earn for themselves. The media doesn't celebrate how workers are creative, ingenious, and capable members of society. Big media often create or promote the social inequalities themselves. For example, think of how their coverage of the reasonable accommodation debate helped revitalize the racist sentiment in the population, or how their depiction of women reinforced gender stereotypes. And then once a year, the media turns around to quote-unquote help the poor by broadcasting their food drives and telethons. In this way, the media make themselves appear to be socially conscious and altruistic, while they are one of the pillars that maintain those same inequalities.
As the gap between the rich and the poor grows deeper, the pressure for corporations to prove some effort at social responsibility also grows. So what do? They become bigger and better hypocrites. The hypocrisy of corporate charitable giving is nothing new. Banks and multinational corporations are huge investors in projects around the globe like mining, petroleum, etc., and they take a lot of public criticism for the mass destruction they sponsor. To offset their bad reputations, they want to manipulate the media and public, so they create charitable foundations that give the illusion that they are doing something to alleviate the negative impacts of their business.
Yeah, like how the Royal Bank of Canada has a Blue Water Project where they have invested millions of dollars to community project to help preserve and protect the water.
Yes, and at the same time, they sponsor loans to Canada's petroleum companies, which are aiming to export oil via oil tankers, which are the most likely source of major oil spills. Not to mention the effect they're having on climate change and the damage to the ecosystems where they operate.
Also for years, Enbridge Corporation had the Enbridge Ride to Conquer Cancer, a cancer research fundraiser named after them. Enbridge is instrumental in the production of tar sands in Western Canada, where their communities have been developing cancers at a more rapid rate since the tar sands began. So once again, it's a smokescreen. They set aside a certain amount of charitable funding for targeted causes and try to keep people from blowing the whistle on them.
And it works!
Yes!
These supposedly philanthropic foundations are great for the corporations who create them. If you can create a reputation in the media for being sustainable or demonstrating corporate responsibility, that's a huge turn-on for investors. But this kind of greenwashing effect that's so prevalent right now is not the only issue behind these networks of philanthropy. When we take a deeper look at charity and non-governmental organizations, we can start to notice patterns of conflicting interests that have become common in the nonprofit structure in the last few decades.
For sure, community organizations that are funded by a combination of government and private sources have to struggle to get funding that's enough to meet their operating costs, which often means that they are stuck with funding that is project-based. Non-governmental organizations can easily end up creating projects that cater to the funding guidelines set up by organizations and donors.
They're essentially limited by their dependency on these foundations. So then what ends up happening is we have all these organizations whose mission is to meet the needs of a certain community base, but their programming is really tailored to the arbitrary interests of their funders. So while a lot of nonprofits are really struggling to support their membership base in a community, they are stuck within this organizing structure that is still very much entrenched in a hierarchy of capitalism, which is the basic formula of charity itself, where members of a lower class are subject to the authority of the wealthier classes. That's not even to mention how nonprofits have their own internal hierarchies, like how executive directors can make tens of thousands of dollars a year while their committed volunteer workers can pour countless hours of work into the organization but never earn a cent for their time, because their labor is classified simply as helping out or doing a good deed.
Exactly. So it's not to say that nonprofits or charities or volunteerism is bad for society. It's more that we want to encourage people not to just support whatever cause they hear about without taking the time to research and question, well, how does this organization work and who is really profiting from it. It's just a matter of taking the time to think about whose interests are really getting prioritized and what impact does an organization really have on its community members.
That brings us to the other part of our topic today, which is solidarity. We wanted to critique the idea of charity because we have a vision of its alternative, and that's solidarity. By solidarity, we mean mutual aid. We mean networks and communities of people who consider each other, who struggle for each other's communal liberation. In a charitable framework, those who receive donations are treated as being in need, as being victims of the system. In a solidarity framework, there are no fixed givers and takers, but rather everyone is seen as being equally deserving of dignity, of rights, and of resources. Everyone is seen as having a responsibility to each other, a responsibility to meet each other's needs and to work towards each other's equitable treatment. Solidarity is about collectivizing and sharing struggles, rather than simply minimizing individual suffering. This isn't to say that it's wrong to participate in projects that minimize individual suffering. Harm reduction organizing has, for example, done plenty to save lives and minimize the daily suffering of people battling situations such as addiction, illness, and homelessness. The achievements of harm reduction are certainly worth celebrating and promoting. Nonetheless, we should be able to access support that actually makes us feel empowered, helps us gain independence, and allows us to advocate for ourselves. We should have access to the means to confront and challenge the structural barriers that keep us poor or keep us in situations of oppression. To give you more clear examples of different community groups where solidarity has been a focus, we can look at Native Friendship Centers, where urban Indigenous people have organized community hubs by and for each other in the spirit of mutual support based on their shared experiences. Or we can look at info shops or collectively run bookstores, spaces where people organize autonomously to share ideas and projects. Right now in the southwest of Montreal, for example, there is a group that will be autonomously running a social space in Point St. Charles in the Bâtiment 7. And another group is currently working to create an autonomous social space in the neighborhood of St. Henry. Solidarity can even look like doing childcare for an acquaintance or participating in a protest. So if you're someone who is considering charity as the holiday season arrives, we encourage you to consider your neighbors, your friends or your family, or your coworkers or classmates. Are there things you or other people in your life need in order to get by? Do you know people having problems at work or dealing with the government or the courts? And are there ways that you can collaborate in order to meet each other's needs or to strategize to solve issues that you both share? If you're feeling in a giving spirit, take some time to look around at who you know and who you can get to know. It can be surprising to find out how much you and the people around you can do for one another. That's been our abecedaire anti-capitalist for December. Thank you so much for listening.